to put an end to sin and to atone for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal both vision and prophet, and to anoint a most holy place. That seems like kingdom coming type of language, to put an ending to sin where it stops, to bring everlasting righteousness. Know therefore and understand that from going out of the word to restore and build Jerusalem to the coming of the anointed one, a prince will be there. A prince there shall be 7 weeks. Then for 62 weeks it shall be built again with squares and a moat, built in a troubled time. And after 62 weeks, an anointed one shall be cut off and shall have nothing. The people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and sanctuary. Its end shall come with a flood, and to the end there shall be war. Desolations are decreed. He shall make a strong covenant. Okay, this is the Antichrist. With many for 1 week. If we're in that 70th week, yo.
What verse are you in, chapter 9?
I'm in 27, about to be done before chapter 9. Okay, he shall make a strong covenant with many for 1 week, and for half of the week he shall put an end to the sacrifice and offering. And on the wings of abomination shall come one who make desolate until the decreed end is poured out on the desolator. Matthew 24, which we'll go back to in a little bit, talks about this. The 1 week, we see that as the 7-year period. So people always ask, when should you start panicking? If you hold a pre-trib, pre-millennial view, is when there's a, and I wouldn't even say it's necessarily with Israel, though I think Israel will be a part of it. I mean, there's always been people who have said this in history. Oh, it's the right time. I mean, look what's going on in the Middle East right now. I mean, it is definitely a hotbed. It is not a place of puppies and unicorns over there. And it could be that it's a perfect time for someone to come in and bring this false sense of security and peace to the Middle East. That is a contract, a literal treaty that people sign for 7 years. Halfway through it, 3.5 years, he's going to break that contract by the abomination of desolation, which we'll see in Matthew 24. And that 7-year period is the beginning of tribulation, so you'll start to see these things poured out. Chapter 6 is, timing-wise, most of the seals happen in the first 3.5 years, and then the trumpets and bowls just pick up in intensity for the last 3.5 years. And you're going to see things that I think, if you've read Left Behind, it's okay because it gives you a picture in different things. What I like the most thing about that is if you hold to that view, you're getting pictures in your head of what would that really be like with people and the persecuted. But the things we see today, for me, they seem so intense. And then you're watching, like here, they just grow in like intensity. It's not a, I mean, and the things we've seen are bad. The tsunami was a terrible thing. You see the video and all those people die. Earthquakes here, was there a big one in 70 in California? Was it 89? I'm not from California, so I don't know my California history. But I remember hearing about it back where I was in Oklahoma. Awful things. When you read these things today, if you're one of the readers, just think about the intensity at which this comes with. I mean, it is the Lamb who is worthy, chapter 5. The only one who is worthy to start delivering on making right that which has been wrong for history and pouring out his wrath, which is just as much a part of his holiness as his kindness. And these are not, I'm just telling you, they're not fun. They're not fun. For the people that are going to be in there, there's going to even be grace by God because there's protection, it shows in some of these, that he gives. But let's start reading. 1 through 2, Jessica. Yep. Chapter 6 of Revelation. Proper person's able to open it there in verse 1. This is a conquering crown. A lot of debate on if this is a person. Do people say this is the same Jesus who comes on the white horse later? Or is it somebody else? The next three riders you're going to see are all impersonal forces. So it seems, at least thematically, that this may not be a person. It may be about what they're bringing on their horse. Its rider had a bow, a warrior, and a crown, a king. So you see a conquering kind of person. And the crown was given him. He came out conquering and to conquer. I think this is the false sense of peace that's going to come from the one, from the Antichrist. I think it's more about this sense of like, there's a war going to bring either peace. You know, could you see a war happening right now in the name of peace? Like someone stepping in, two sides that are fighting, like we're going to destroy both of you to settle the things down. I think that's what you see here. Question.
Yeah, that's
another logical. He's the guy opening the seals, and they're calling forth this one, so he's present. So, plus, they're just very different descriptions of what you see in the returning conquering king. These are about judgments being poured out. He's coming as the consummation of all that. So, I don't see any reasonable evidence that's the same one when you look through and over. He's unleashed by God to go in the name of peace. Which is interesting, that you're going to see a lot of things that God has been the allower of. It's not like God's going, oh no, what's happening? You know, sometimes we see that as like there's all this bad stuff, and we're like, God, what are you doing? And sometimes we need to realize, you're allowing this right now, which gives you a different perspective of who God is. He's just not going to compromise on who he is. And we anthropomorphize or humanize him so much that we think he's going to be like us. And have the influence of our culture that says you just be kind to everybody and just everything's about love and making your own choices and what's true for you is good and what's true for me is good and we'll just be happy. It's not who God is. Okay, he's not a postmodern millennial that thinks that way. He is holy and righteous and true and loving and kind, and he will pour out his wrath on creation. And we are watching that start right here. Verse 3 through 4, birthday boy, Lee. So you see this white horse. So you see this white horse first that's conquering, but maybe in the name of peace, and brings in what you saw there in Daniel, that there's this false sense of peace that's set, time frame wise, 7 years, there's a halfway point. 7 years marks that covenant or signing he'll make in that area, not necessarily that people. It breaks here, abomination of desolation, and then consummates with his return here. Okay, we're even going to see later, the book talks about 45 days of something that happens before the new heavens and the new earth. So this was a red one, and what's he bringing? War. He's disturbing that up. Okay, he's bringing war. The third seal, 5 through 6, Buck.
When he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come," and I looked, and behold, a black horse, and its rider had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard what seemed to be a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius. Do not harm the oil and wine."
Scales is not necessarily judgment. Scales is more measuring context here. The idea that food is going to get pricey and scarce and not everyone will be able to eat and feed your family. Some of these, too, you're starting to see things that'll happen. War inevitably changes the environment. When cosmological and meteorological things happen, it is very difficult to do agriculture based on what we know. When water stops, it's very difficult to grow things. Talked with a guy this week who goes to our church, huge agricultural company in town, and panicked because he said, "I've always been able to find peaches somewhere in the barn somewhere to process and get to somebody." And he's having to tell people right now, "I just don't have them." And everybody's saying, "I just don't have them," because this drought is literally killing the industry. And it doesn't look like relief in forecasting. So I say the people of God who love his creation and are very well off because of 25% of the world's food coming from this state and this region, to pray for rain. And the things you're going to see here are just going to make that across the world a problem. So you're going to see people and food a real issue, which we got 4 dozen donuts back there. We can go to Save Mart and pick and choose. It seems that's a comfort and a luxury that most of the world doesn't have and may not be around forever. And it's why we believe as Christians we need to be good stewards of all that, and what we purchase and how we purchase and what we eat and how we eat and what we put in. So eat another donut. Amen. We're celebrating today. Denarius is a day's wages. 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, that's like with your family. Oil and wine are preservers of different things. So he's just basic. There's a caution there of don't hurt and take care of don't waste the stuff that's going to preserve a very limited thing. So you're going to see famine, worldwide famine, as a part of the judgment being poured out during this time, okay, during those 7 year periods. 7 through 8, Sean.
When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, "Come," and I looked, and behold, a pale horse. Its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed him. And they were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword and with famine and with pestilence and by wild beasts of the earth.
What were those things? War, pestilence, famine. What do you think wild beasts are? Like giraffes running crazy? Dinosaur, return of the Dinobots coming back?
Transformers.
I've seen Transformers, it's true. Pale is the idea of green. Have you ever seen somebody when they look sick? They're just off color, and you're like, oh, buddy, you need to sit down. That's the color of this horse, so it's probably more green. We get our word chlorophyll from it, or chlorine. Chlorophyll, more like borophyll. But Death and Hades, it's interesting how he notes how it follows. Think of Death as the lawnmower and Hades as the grass trap, the bag. Okay, Death's going to come through all these different things, and Hades is where you're going to go and get trapped there in your death. That there's no hope for you when you die in this time, just like there's no hope right now outside of Jesus if you die. War, pestilence, famine, wild beasts. Wild beasts is probably the idea, and this will blow your history mind, more of the idea of like rodents. Cockroaches and rodents will survive nuclear war. In Europe, a third of Europe died with a little something called what? Bubonic or bubonic plague, I forgot however they say it. You know how that was transferred mostly? Rats. A third of a continent. So imagine if there's disease everywhere and war and bodies and blood and sickness because nobody's eating and those little things are feeding and going everywhere and reproducing all the time. It's not so far-fetched to think of something like that being the wild beast versus like angry warthog running through the streets. Okay? That's probably... Huh?
That's not the pestilence.
No. I mean, I think it goes through there. I think pestilence is disease. Pestilence is disease. Okay? So those are the riders that come. If you ever heard of the four horsemen of the apocalypse... That's what you're talking about right there. Okay? White, red, black, and pale. Probably bigger ideas than people on a horse. Now, I think the books, if I remember right, and Left Behind represented these people as all kinds of different stuff and Nikolai's whatever. But I think the symbolism is going more towards those conquering things than people. Okay? So that's the pale horse. Not good at this point, right? Okay, it's only going to get worse here. 9 through 11, Allison. So these are people in the tribulation who are slain, killed, okay, for the word of God and what they're witnessing to. Keep going. So, not that complicated of a reading. If you just read in here that there's these tribulation saints who are killed, the judgment that comes, though, is from their prayers and what God does to people who, in his wrath being poured out, who don't believe. Which this is not your best side as the creator. This isn't the profile you want everybody to see. Because of what people are praying and saying, I'm out here doing this thing, when are you going to take care of them? That judgment's starting to come now towards these people who are persecuting those who are martyred and under the altar. That just means under the protection of God. Okay? And they are each given a white robe, which we see from the church earlier in those chapters 2 and 3, and told to rest a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete. So they die in the seven, probably first 3.5 years or whatever, time-wise doesn't matter, but it's before the 7 years is up, and so they are given that eternal rest immediately with the Lord under the protection, that rest until God can continue to draw up his elect through that time that he's using. Okay, that's what that means there at the end. They are each given a white robe so that it's not their earthly bodies, it's that inheritance of new life with God. Rest a little longer until that number is complete, which talks about his sovereignty, too, in a great way. And the way it's complete is they have to be killed. Part of his elective purposes, then, was to come to faith and share the good news during this terrible, terrible time, and they're going to die, like these tribulation saints, too. Yo.
In your model, the raptures happen?
Yes. The ones to come to faith still in the time. So there's a church, there's people coming to faith during this time, they die, and then they're given rest a little while until this number can be complete, until those people who are witnessed to by the 144,000, the two witnesses, come to believing faith in Jesus. What do you mean by apostasy? Oh yeah, I mean, both. Both, and it's Christians versus everybody else, and probably, I mean, now you think of it, and we think of it like yin and yang battle right there, right, and crusaders versus whatever. It's probably more like what we see now, but on a grander scale. There are Christians still becoming Christians in all parts of the world, in every country, hopefully, even the ones that aren't reached, let's go there and do that, and there's tribulation going on right now, and I could see a heightened sense of religious and a return of polytheistic ways at this time, trying to explain cataclysmical events. But the church is going forward. I mean, you're going to see that even more in chapter 7, that people are still coming to faith in this, and there are people who are going to reject it, who don't like it. Six seals, so we have, let's do 12 through 13. Dan.
When he opened the sixth seal, I looked, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth. The full moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth as the fig tree sheds its winter fruit when shaken by a gale.
Okay, the a great earthquake, probably like never before. You're going to see some things that interact later. The sun became black. Some say that's from ash from volcanic eruptions. The moon's like blood. The stars fall from the sky. It's probably not stars that we see, because we would absolutely be obliterated by a star that hit the earth. It's probably like meteor shower and those things coming in and falling from the sky. And you just see those things falling, which would create environmental issues, breathing issues, air quality issues, all those kinds of things. 14 through... let's do 14 and 15. Jeremiah.
The sky was split apart like a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island were moved out of their place.
What? Think about that. It's islands are dropping into the ocean because of these quakes. Mountains are crumbling because of these things. Keep going.
Then the kings of the earth.
still a lot of time to go, and you're finding these people now in the caves of these fallen mountains trying to hide and protect themselves from all these things that are falling and rumbling. And crying out, too. There's, I think a lot of them will see God for who he is. But you just see that poured out on the sixth seal. Okay, that's sixth seal. There's seven. But remember, the seventh is always the collective sum of the next. Right? So if you think six was bad, seventh seal is going to be seven trumpets. And so it's just like, again, you got to just feel this increase in, like, it's rising up. Now, I don't think all of this will happen day. If it's a seven-year period and they're happening at different times, I mean, you got to think you go through earthquakes, you go through famine, you go through pestilence, and like the news is very busy for a while. And then here's where it's like you're past, I think, the 3.5 years at this point when the seventh starts rolling out because of what's happening. Danielle, 7:1-2. Have you read today? Okay, good. That's just a compass, okay? Some people have used this to argue silly science away, like, look, they believe the earth was flat. The 4 points on a compass, the 4 winds that represent where they blow, that's what that means. Stop right there. Buck, you're familiar with agriculture. What happens when the wind doesn't blow and water doesn't move?
We have absolutely no rain, no wind. Plants need the wind blowing over the leaves in order to uptake the water from down below. It's a passive system of how they draw water up. And if you do not have wind, plants can't get water to their leaves up top.
See what's happening here? And by the way, it's not blowing anywhere in the world.
Which means that there's no weather
anywhere in the world. How ominous. Do you get the pause that's happening right here before this seven trumpets and seven bowls? It's like all this crazy stuff happens, and then it's like it goes deathly still. As if anticipation for what's coming. That's what you're feeling. That's what you're seeing here. As far as the sealing on their foreheads goes, to me it's like one of the most open-handed things in all this book. People get super jacked about figuring out what that means. It's less about what's on their forehead and more about that they're sealed and protected. That's what that means. That's what you need to get out of there. We get enthralled with, like, is it one of those pictures, 3D pictures you have to look through, and if you're looking at their forehead the right way, it's a seal? Is it a literal number that's on their head? Is it a cross? It doesn't matter. These people are going to preach and share the good news, and they're protected and sealed from these tribulation things that are coming. And they do it because don't harm the trees until we have sealed all the servants of our God on their foreheads. And it's 144,000, which you still have to remember. Chapter 6 through 22, you never, ever, ever, ever hear the writer talk about the church again. You don't. And here, people have tried to say this is a representative of the church. No, it's not. If you're a literal reader of this, this is Israel and tribes of Israel. That's what this is in here. So we don't have to read them all. You just see 12,000. Judah, Reuben, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, Simeon, Levi. Dan's the one removed. Levi's usually not mentioned. But you also go through the Old Testament when they are listing of the 12 different tribes. It's like the spiritual gifts. There's lots of lists, and they're all in different order. And so here's representatives from these 12 tribes.
Why does it say the four angels? Is he referring to the four horsemen that are given the authority to harm the earth? And now he's referring to them as angels?
And he's saying to them, with a loud voice, to the four angels who had been given power to harm the earth and sea. These are the angels that were holding back the winds. And he's saying to them, not hold them back. So I think these are heavenly beings that he's saying, don't let your fury out until these 144 are sealed. That I just read that these are people from Israel's lineage, from those tribes that are raised up and sealed to proclaim the good news of Christ. Okay? Sealed. Yep. That these tribulations are not going to hurt them as they go out and do their thing. And there's going to be two in particular that kind of go infamous on the global scale, okay, that you're going to see, and then there's going to be a real public death from them and all that kind of stuff. Okay? Yo. Mm-hmm. Converted Jews.
New believers.
Right.
How do you mesh that with the elect? Were they not elect and therefore raptured?
Yeah, I think they're here and they come to faith at this time, and then they're sealed as a special soldier, if you will, to be a part of this 144,000 that are going to be used. I think there are other believers than the 144,000. We've already heard them die. And go to heaven.
Rapture isn't all of the elect. It's just a portion of the elect.
It's believers to the point that this starts backwards. And then you have a world of unbelievers, but people are coming to faith now in that, and the 144,000 is a part of that.
They would be elect.
Yes.
The of the world,
yes.
Not
raptured.
Not raptured elect.
Correct. Correct. In my model, yes. Back there, Chris. Huh? Oh, the tribe of Dan? A lot of people have different philosophies, and none of them are compelling, but none of them cause great worry either. Sometimes Joseph was put in there and Dan wasn't. Sometimes it was based on the size of the tribe, so the bigger the tribe you were, the more likely you were to make the list. I don't know that it is imperative that Dan's not there, but I see the 12 here and from Levi too, which is an interesting priesthood line, but you see 12,000 from each and 144,000 total that are going to be off and running sharing the good news. Okay, and then look in verse 9. It says, after this. Okay, a lot of times you see John seeing things that happen and having a new vision or a different turn on it. So after this, I looked and behold a great multitude that no one could number from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages standing before the throne. And before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, with palm branches in their hands. And they're crying with a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. And all the angels were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures. And they fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped God, saying, amen, blessing and glory, wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. Amen. I think he's looking into that heavenly realm again. And I think he's seen those things there and all kinds of people now. You just went from elect of 144,000 from a Jewish lineage that are now believers who are sealed and protected, sharing the good news, to seeing a great multitude that no one could number. Every nation, tribe, peoples, and languages. Yeah. Then one of the elders addressed me, who are these clothed in white robes and from where have they come? I said to him, sir, you know. That is not helpful for us, really, ultimately, who are trying to figure this out. And he said to me, these are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Okay, so we need that help. He says, these are now who are in there. He's looking in heaven. He's saying, these have come out of the tribulation. And once they've died, tribulation saints, they're with that great multitude, the raptured church, and now in heaven with him. And look at this little hymn they sing. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. He who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. They are going to hunger no more. Why? Because famine was a big part of this. Neither thirst anymore. Water wasn't moving. Disease in the water. Bad wells. Bad everything. The sun shall not strike them when all those meteorological things are happening, nor the heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd. He will guide them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. So there's, even in this terrible, terrible thing that's being unleashed, you see people rightly perspective on who God is and what he's doing. Okay? Chapter 8. Well, actually, let's do this before we go to chapter 8. Go back to Matthew 24. Go back to Matthew 24. Flip backwards. So he goes on his Olivet Discourse, and he's reading here in chapter 24, verse 4, to his disciples, see that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name and say, I'm the Christ, and you will hear wars and rumors of wars. We've seen that. We've seen that on our board so far. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There are famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of birth pains. So you see natural things happening. You see wars happening now that in the news you can, I've often thought, birth pains. You see what's going on, like birth pains of what to come. And you wonder, have you ever wondered, like, how could people be tricked? I mean, Chris, you kind of alluded to it in your question earlier. Like, how are people just not like, man, God's in charge? Did you know Hitler wrote a book called Mein Kampf 10 years before he did what he did, laying out almost exactly what he was going to do? And people shrugged it off and wrote it off, and different people, different parliaments and different things made excuses and stuff like that till it happened. And then finally, England in particular came back, and it wasn't till I think Austria that it was on Donkey Kong worldwide. So it has happened. People have been deceived and misled. To see something like this, it's easy for me to rationalize without feeling all that's going on to go, man, I could see people making excuses. I could see the media having a heyday with all these things and bringing on this specialist and that specialist who's talking about this. And we're kind of immune to war. Did you know we've been in war for a long time as a country? Yet most of us don't even really give a hoo-ha about anything, because it's like, oh, I'm just glad those guys are over there doing that for us, instead of realizing men and women every day are giving their life over there so that we can sit here and in our freedoms sit here. There's a big disconnect in understanding around the world, and we're not the only country battling wars. You can go to any other continent and find civil wars and different things, and it's just a mess. So on a bad day, when I'm just super like in my flesh and full of wrath, like like my wrath, I'm just like, just burn it all. I want this to come and just make it right. But then you say, why are we still here? We got an exposure trip coming next winter to Syria to help refugees who are fleeing the men and influences that we watch on video cutting guys' heads off, who are fleeing that country, and we have a mission trip to go help that. Who's got the courage to step on that trip? Who wants to lead that thing? I don't know. I have to tell you, we don't know yet. I'm trying to raise them up. John Piper was asked a long time ago, why do you preach so much about people being ready for facing tribulation? He's like, I'm not preaching for you. I'm preaching for your kids. Which I just thought, ooh, man, that's good. I think God will stir, maybe even this room, but I think God will stir in his church to have the Jonas who will go to the Assyrias, modern day Iraq, and be willing to go, I'll go and proclaim Jesus. Like, there's part of me inside, like, I fired up too. I'm like, man, I don't know. I probably wouldn't come home, but is there a better way to go? I'm just going to go for it. That'd be rad. Volunteer, I see your hand. Question.
If the rapture happens before all these seven seals, why is there so much warning towards the Christians?
Watch. So much warning? Be ready in tribulation, run away. Yeah. Because I think there are people who acknowledge him. I think not everybody who Jesus talked to was a believer in him. And so I think that you're gonna experience this tribulation. But woe to the pregnant women in nursing in this time who are going to have a hard time taking care of themselves. That I just think there's people who think they're a part of the crowd that aren't. And so the admonition goes out to all people. Be ready, and be faithful in it too. Tribulation doesn't just mean the 7-year period. Do you experience tribulation as a believer? I do, as a pastor. Do I experience suffering? Absolutely, still. So I think we have to see what he's talking about, where he's talking about it. Keep reading in 24. You saw all the things that he's mentioned now. Because the lawlessness will increase and the love of many will grow cold, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. This gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed through the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and the end will come. That I think all over the world, this good news of Jesus is going around. And look, when you see the abomination of desolation, spoken by the prophet Daniel, standing in the holy place halfway through the week, what we read earlier, Let those who are in Judea flee the mountains. Let the one who's on the housetop not go down, take his house, and let the one who's in the field not turn his cloak. Because this, I think, when he does this in the tribulation at 3.5 weeks or 3.5 years in, what Jesus is saying here is, you thought it was bad for 3.5 years? It's about to get worse with seven trumpets and seven bowls. Okay? And for alas, women who are pregnant, nursing, pray that your flight may not be at winter on the Sabbath. There will be a great tribulation such as not been seen from the beginning of the world until now. No, and never will be. That's why I raised my sights to go, man, from the time of the creation to we see these things happening, there's been nothing like it on a global scale. Nothing like it. And so I have a hard time looking back. And were there fires and earthquakes and different things? Absolutely. But I don't see... did we skip over in Revelation the amount of people that died, or is that to come? Flip back to Revelation. Trying to look back in chapter 6. For some reason, I thought there was a number of people. Maybe we missed it. Fourth of the earth. Six. Is that in 7 and 8? Fourth of the earth. Authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, famine, with pestilence, and wild beasts of the earth. If there's 6 billion people roughly right now, that means 1.5 billion people dead. Billion. I don't think a fourth of the earth has been killed historically.
Jared, back on the context of Matthew 24.
Right. All kinds of crowds there in 24.
But it actually, he's just talking privately with the disciples. It says, Matthew 24.
After the Mount of Olives, his disciples came in privately?
Yeah, disciples came in privately.
Okay.
Saying, tell us when these things will be and what will be the sign of your coming. That whole section in 24, he's just talking privately to his disciples.
But do you think when he's talking in 15 about a tribulation time, that then he's talking about those people in tribulation times, or he's just talking about those disciples?
Well, I think he's talking to those disciples.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's giving them a warning.
Mm-hmm.
I think the context is so critical in trying to put all this together. This is a private conversation.
Okay. So what would be the point then?
Well, I don't want to derail our...
No, it's great. We got time.
Now, they just previously walked through the temple.
Mm-hmm.
They said, look around, guys. This isn't going to be here.
Right.
Every stone's going to be gone.
Right.
And then they go over to the Mount of Olives, and they ask him some clarifying questions. And he starts to prepare them for...
Sure.
A lot of tribulation.
Yeah.
That's ahead.
In Jerusalem particularly.
Beautiful temple. And he's saying...
30 years, it's going to be gone.
Your life is going to get crazy.
Right. So who then, if that is immediate, who's the abomination of desolation, and when will these things, such like the world has never seen, when did they happen?
Well, I think he's speaking in apocalyptic language, taking them as good students of the Old Testament. Taking them back to
Daniel 9.
To Daniel. And in their nation's history,
mm-hmm.
when
they're in captivity.
And wipe them out. He's
mm-hmm.
saying, better get your chin straps on.
Sure.
It's going to break out again.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that break out in their generation. The Romans.
At this same way, at this same level, like we see in Revelation 2.
Mm-hmm.
But I would agree with you, and I think there's a, I think we actually share more similarities in seeing that the necessity of what these texts mean for them, but also for a long time. But I can't get away from language. I can't get away from literally looking at the breadth of some of these things. And when they talk about the end of age, I think they are two good Old Testament people talking about the return of the Messiah and to consummate as king. And I see this as him talking about that thing to come. And yeah, they're going to experience it in little, but I don't see those things happening. The decree that went out for 7 years of peace and that thing. I don't see 3.5 years of this cosmological, meteorological things that happen. But I think he's talking about this. I think he's saying in a private conversation, because they said, when's the end of the age coming? He's like, I'm going to tell you what it's like. And I think they're right to go, this is my life and this is what I'm experiencing. But to maybe just be the counter flip, like when you say, I don't think we need to overinterpret, I don't think we need to undersell and try to stretch what happened then to meet what we see here, because this all matches exactly almost with what happens in Revelation and what we see in 6 through 20. I feel like it's a stretch to go back and say, man, all that really did happen. A fourth of the earth, all this stuff turned upside down, famine like we've never seen, fires like we've never seen, mountains crumbled, trees obliterated, grass obliterated. I'm like, that seems like a stretch the other way to me. So, and part of me says maybe our meeting in the middle is, yeah, he was prepping them for real things that they were going to see tangibly, and a destruction of the temple that did happen in 70. But I think there's a consummation of it all that's happening here in Revelation, which language-wise goes all the way back to 24 and even to Daniel, that, again, is just how you run that golden thread through. So it doesn't scare me. I don't even think – I think I'd say I hold it both open-handed. And I probably would agree to disagree, but see and validate your point in there. There's just this breadth I see here in Revelation that matches up with what he was talking about. Let me see here in 24 if it keeps going, or 25.
I agree. I mean, Revelation
is
definitely connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and he also spends most of that time, the focus of that Olivet Discourse. If we take away the logistics and don't try to snap those pegs in, what it's really about is be ready. Be ready. If you take the 30,000 foot view, you know, much like we do, the Gospel Coalition says we're going to be these things as a church, and then you have freedoms. I even think maybe your language is the non-essentials. There's liberty, you know. So I think some of these eschatological planes out, maybe not non-essential to the return of Christ. I think the things, again, we raise up, and I mentioned this the first week, be ready. You don't know when it's coming, because that's what he talks about here. So you're not going to know. We want to know exactly when it is. You're going to see these things, but be ready, because you're not going to know. Yes. For 1, 2, 3, John. Yeah.
One more quick thing, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree that the message is be ready.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think going back and looking through Matthew 24 and 25, when he's talking about what's coming, that's in the tribulation when it starts. And at that point, if the church is not there, those people do need to be ready. It's like, yeah, if you're here, if this was a room, if it, stay with the model. If the rapture happened and today we were the ones left in the world and those things started coming out, Matthew 24 and 25 be true. Man, I hope you're not pregnant in here because of what's coming. I hope, you know what I mean? I hope it's not this. I also don't think rapture means no tribulation for your whole life. Because then we got to look at the rest of scriptures and what we can anticipate and suffering. You want to go read 1st and 2nd Peter? Christians get suffering. That's what we get in the New Testament. You get suffering. And so I think that we can't. There's a blend of the Christian life that gets suffering and has to endure tribulation and stuff against that. Then there's these end time things that I think he's speaking specifically to in 24 and 25. And raising something for the sights that the disciples couldn't see. Now I'm hindsight 20/20 because I can look back through some of these things and go, I don't see it matching perfectly. And to look in that time and feel like I'm this first century fisherman going, okay. You know, and I probably see Peter like chin strap up. Let's go. I'm ready to go do this right now. And again, I think it comes back to how you connect these things. Chris. Oh yeah, I mean we saw in this today, Revelation 6, people who have come to faith in that time that are under the altar of God, protected, because they were part of that elect. And even that's what's crazy to think is we can start reading Revelation like an arcade game, and it's the last level and everything's on, and so now it's like now you really know and can really make your choice to come to faith. We got to remember Genesis through Revelation, and we believe in the sovereignty of God. From the foundations of the world, he's going to draw all those men and women. He's going to call those men. He's going to, whom he called, he justified, glorified, all those different things of Romans 8, 28, 29, 30 is happening. The vehicle it's coming through is the tribulation. So that's a temptation to do into Revelation. It's like, oh, now there's so much bad going on. These people can make a very good choice for themselves. Theologically, we don't believe that. If we believe in the sovereign election of God, that's just the worst. That's a bit of our Americanism, individualistic. We think it's about that person and their choice. This is not. This is about the end of human history in Revelation 6 and following. All of the wrath being poured out, but yet you even see God being gracious in that time, calling people to himself along the way who are enduring terrible things. Who are enduring terrible things. Back to Revelation 6 or 7. The last seal here, the last seal, okay? Let's see here. Jordan, 8, 1 through 5.
When the Lamb opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Then I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and the seven trumpets were given to them. And another angel came and stood at the altar with a golden censer, and he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne, and the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints rose before God from the hand.
We drastically underestimate how God uses prayer for all things. That's identified here. Prayers of the saints rising up like incense before the God and from this the hand of the angel. You think people's prayer life are going to change in those 7 years? You think there's a dependency every day for a lot of them that we don't feel because of the urgency of what's going on all around them? Absolutely. Absolutely. Verse 5.
Then the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and threw it on the earth, and there were peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and earthquake.
What happens when you hear thunder? In your mind, what do you know is coming? And what else? The storm. This is the rumble of the storm to come that God is initiating, that the Lamb called forward and these seven angels. Now the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to blow them. Okay? Again, the seventh seal is all these seven trumpets that are going to be poured out. Escalation. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Worse than the previous 6. 7 bowls. I mean, you just get a sense over this time that it's like just huge push towards these crazy things. What we've seen is bad enough. What we've seen in the first 6 seals, again, I don't think I've seen in human history happen. And it's a third of the way through. You're going to see some of these things in the trumpets that are just, it's like, stop it already. Stop it already. And then you have bowls to come. And then you have bowls made out. And we're going to get into some really fun stuff here in, I think, 12 and following, when you start talking about the people involved and the woman and the dragon and the woman of the water and all this stuff. It'll be fun. It's crazy. Any questions? The reason we're slowing down here and giving so much time and we've ended early is I want to be able to dialogue through some of those things as we get through here. And Revelation can be so overwhelming. I either have to do chapters 6 through 9 in one day and just be done and like get them behind us and then really work out some of the other things to come. So we're stretching out this book in the spring so that we don't just sprint through it and go, okay, great, you got Revelation good, all tied up in a bow. Question. The prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne, I think that's your raptured church and your tribulation saints who are there that he saw in that opening vision of seven. Yes, that's what he's seen. That's what he's seen. Like in the beginning of seven, when he said after this, or I'm sorry, verse 9 of seven, he gets a look in there and what's going on. So I think those prayers, which could be rising up, they did previously, they rose up from the earth. So I think it's symbolic of the prayer of the saints, either that are crazy fly, currently happening or what's being declared in there. Now, the prayer life of a saint is different than the prayer life of someone in tribulation. So again, how much of it is this or how much is that? He sees those raptured saints. He sees those tribulation saints. But the prayer rising up and this incense that's going up is the bigger picture for him, about which is symbolic of prayer there in chapter 8. So again, how much of which one and who? I don't know that it's as important of knowing. It's about prayer right here, that they're hearing and listening to, responding to, the Lamb is using with these angels to be like, put fire in your trumpet. And it goes out. I read that somewhere. I don't think that's true. I read that somewhere, but it was like, they said there was no other evidence anywhere from that, like the Antichrist would come from Dan. It probably makes sense that it resembles, you know, somebody who has street cred to step into that world and both bring, like, who Israel would look to and go, oh yeah, absolutely, we could sign that, and the Palestinians would be, yeah, absolutely, we could do that. I mean, yesterday was a huge speech on the future of that area, which is interesting. I know this too. Okay, sometimes we start reading this and we think Israel and the rest of the world, and the rest of the world's just whatever. Did you know that there are Christians in Palestine? Did you know there are Christians in Iraq? Did you know there's Christians in Iran? Not very many. A lot of them are being killed. One of the lowest populations, if not the lowest, of like targeted people group. Christians, okay? You got to think of that. This is not good versus bad. A lot of our Sunday schools and whatever have you can have your theology about Israel, and but not at the expense of Christian and who God reaches in all tribes, all nations, all tongues. Do I think there's a future for Israel? Yep, that's my bent. We'll get into more of that, especially down the road. And you guys will definitely get into it, Romans 9, 10, 11 with Shay. How far are you in there? And then he left? So that's what you're going to hit the rest of the spring? Cool. That'd be good. If you've been here on Sunday, you've been, you're still in Romans 3:23. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory. Not saved. Well, be prepared. Tribulation's coming. Let me look here if I have any other notes. All the way through. Yeah. 6 and 7. Pretty crazy. 9 is going to be those, and then 10, you get into 10, you get into fun, and then 10, we see Elijah and Elisha, or at least resembles of them down the road. And then we get in, 12 is fun. 12 is where I think it turns into a comic book. Not trying to lighten it, but it just feels like it. Any other thoughts or questions? Okay, ready to go? It's not. Is it overwhelming? I mean, but it should be at least, even depending on where you go, because I know there's folks in here that we share things. It's like we can grasp models, we can grasp direction. Sometimes I think we don't ever open up Revelation because we're just like, I don't know, this is crazy. But I mean, we're 6 chapters in. You're a third of the way through. There's a reasonable side to the letter that was written. You can understand. Okay, good. Let me pray for us. Father, thanks for today, and this is heavy news to hear. At the core of who we are, it's ultimately good news that you're going to do what you're going to do. You're going to bring about your decree, your holiness, your righteousness, your wrath, to restore that to which you want, to bring that which is new down from where you are, and to reign forever, symbolically, literally, spiritually. And that is comforting, but I know this, God. In my own heart, I read this, and I want to be found ready. I want to be found living for you, doing the things for you, whether this occurs in my life or my kid's life or in one to come. Would you use us to help people be ready for that, to live for something bigger, and to trust in the one that goes beyond seals and trumpets and judgments? To hope in the one who is worthy to open the seals, to decree the angels to blow the trumpets, to decree the angels to pour out the bowls of wrath. Would you draw men and women by using people and the power of your Holy Spirit to come to faith in Jesus? As bad as this is, eternity without you is worse. And we are walking by dead women, dead men all day long who need the hope and the good news of Jesus. So would you give us eyes to see today? Would you give us ears to hear and discern, a mind to discern where they're at? And can we have boldness to proclaim the goodness of Christ in all that we do, whether it's the way we work or the conversation we have at lunch? We're grateful. We're fearful. And that's the beginning of understanding and knowledge and seeing the Lord. And so on our knees, on our face here today, we worship you. We're grateful for you. We don't deserve you. We trust and hope in you. We pray in the name of Jesus. Amen. Syria? Andrew? Andrew and Holly? Or actually, Holly would be the best. She's the one running with it. Because her and Chris worked with those refugees in Syria.
Is this a trip that's going to go on in 1 year?
Winter.
This one in the winter is more of a scouting trip to see if we want to do it. So it's got to be a special ops crew. Can't be a high school kid. And,
yeah.
Whatever.
How long are they going to be gone?
I'm not sure. Holly would know. I can find out for you, though. I have the date. She sent me an email. I don't know.
They're still in town right now, right? They're just getting ready to go back.
No, I think. I don't know what their long-term plans are. They're working with Waves.
Yeah.
Working with
I know that they were leaving in March
for
3 months.
Next year?
No, right now.
Oh, yeah. They're going to leave here soon.
Yeah. Oh. They're looking to sublet their current apartment.
Okay.
Right now.
Crazy.
They had left yet or not.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your soccer.
Thanks. Game.